itself, but there we are. But let's explain why.
Okay, we've got two grown-up children, Jonathan and Zoe. You should be seeing photographs of Jonathan. No, that's not Jonathan. The couple, that's Jonathan, my son, with the beard. And that's Sophia without the beard. Although she is Swedish, that's Sophia. And there's lots of beards in Sweden. They embarked upon a two-year Arabic language course in Amman back in September 2014 because they wanted to serve Syrian refugees wherever that might be, wherever God leads them. It's your bit now, Nia. We've got a script here.
They rent an apartment in walking distance of the school where they're training, and they live alongside Jordanians and have been immersed in the culture every day. When not in school on a Friday to Sunday, which is a marvellous weekend to have, you know, most of us have only Saturday and Sunday, but they have Friday to Sunday, they spend time in Mafraq, which is about an hour away by taxi from where they are, and here they catch up with other staff members of All Nations, which is a missions group which has been set up by Floyd and Sally McClung in South Africa, and they trained with them, and they've now gone to Jordan to work there and to learn the language and to begin reaching out to Syrian refugees. And they work quite closely with the pastor of the Alliance Church in Mafraq, whose name is Pastor Noor.
Many of you will have heard about the Zaatari refugee camp. Well, that's based fairly nearby to Mafraq. But due to the poor conditions within this UN camp, many Syrians choose to live outside in rented rooms or shared houses. They'd rather their children live as normal as possible. Can you hear me, by the way? They'd rather their children live as normal as possible, although this means they don't get UN food vouchers and support that others within the camp would get. It's tough as refugees are not allowed to work unless they purchase an expensive work permit, which most of them are unable to buy from the Jordanian authorities. 20% of Jordan's population is now Syrian. They're relatively safe in Jordan, but their prospects are not very good.
Jonathan and Sophia and the team they work with regularly visit local Syrian refugees. You'll see that from the photographs there. There's one where they're having a meal with a family, if you've come across that one. And they get to use their Arabic, and they receive an amazing hospitality. And that's one of the key issues. A lot of the Syrian folk are so hospitable that they find it very hard then, even though they've got nothing, and they lay spread out and all the rest, they've got nothing, and they will give you their week's supply if you visit them. And, you know, they really are quite poor, but they're quite proud people as well, in a sort of self-sufficient way. And so you can't just give them a food parcel. You've got to be very discreet in the way that you leave food parcels with them. And it's got to be relational. You've got to have built up a relationship with them first to be able to do that. But their hospitality is just excels, you know. And, you know, the food parcels, I'm not sure whether you've seen one yet, but there we go, if we can hold that one. That shows you what's in the parcels, mainly dried fruit, dried goods, I should say. And it helps them to, you know, feed a family and give them nutritious meals. Food there is expensive to buy, so these food parcels are quite important for these folk to be able to survive.
Yeah. So the average cost to buy all those items, as it says, is 25 Jordanian dinars, which is it's just under £25. And we wanted to give you the opportunity that if any of you wanted to donate money for a parcel or for part of a food parcel, that we would be delighted that perhaps if you give it through Eden funds, that those of you who are taxpayers, you could even gift aid that giving. But we'd be very happy to take a gift from Eden, which would go to the funds to be able to purchase the parcels. Jonathan is keen, our son is keen for Neil and I to meet some of his Syrian friends. They're not just refugees to them, they're friends in Mafraq. This is not just food distribution. I think Neil already mentioned it's actually building relationships with local people, showing them that they're they're valued, that they're loved, and that they matter. And we're very impressed with what we've heard that Pastor Noor is doing, aren't we, as well? It seems to be a really good, a good team there, the mission group and the church working together and showing the love of Jesus. Okay.
I haven't got this scripted, but they've had some fantastic stories where they've met with Syrian refugees who've already had dreams of being spoken to by Jesus and have been challenged by Jesus. And so they've had fantastic opportunities of just being able to share more and more about Jesus, the healer, as so many of the Muslim refugees know Jesus as. And of course, for a lot of them, they're beginning to explore Jesus and explore Christianity in a way that they've never been able to do in their home country, because although they've had to flee, it's given them freedom to go into churches and to just be able to find out more about who this Jesus is. And the downside is that some churches got very frightened about having Muslim people coming into their services. So please pray for them, that they'll have the courage to share their faith and be able to bring people to Jesus. But thank you for listening, and we appreciate your prayers for our trip, especially being so close to the Syrian border. And we'll be back around the 9th of May, and hopefully we'll be able to give you a bit more feedback on that. So thank you for your time. If you have any questions, we will be around at the back and that at the end. Okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
Father, we're so thrilled about this work, and we bless you, Father, for raising up your people and sending them out into these different places, Lord. We want to pray for Neil and Carla, and we want to pray for their son Jonathan and his wife
Sophia.
And Lord, we just want to ask that you'd bless this trip, Lord. Bless them as a family, that they'd have some great family time together. But also, Lord, just take them to the places that you need them to be at, Lord. Help Neil and Carla to see the things that you need them to see, and Father, to be in the place that they need to be for your kingdom purposes to be done, Lord. Help us as a church just to get behind that, Lord, and to support. And we pray, Lord, that we would be a blessing, Lord, as this arm reaches out in this way over these next few weeks, Lord. We want to pray, Father, that you'd enable us to bless. In Jesus' name. Amen.
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 Thank you.
Down there. I wonder if we would be so kind, young man, to point that towards me.
Great, good morning, lovely to see you, and great to be here. Never heard a dance version of that song, No Place I'd Rather Be, if you know the original. A great group of people, musicians actually, called United Pursuits. Highly recommend their music. So, we need a Bible. If you've got a Bible, I'm going to tell you a little bit about our story of how we got here. And then we're going to have a bit of jazz music, might have a bit of classical music. The Gidney family, we're very, very musical, so we're going to be doing a bit of jazz. If any of you watched The Voice last night, did you see my nephew get through to the final, Jolan Gidney? My mother's here, that's my grandson, her grandson. Did very well, singing Purple Rain. And I was very jealous, what a great voice he's got. And please vote for him next week, that would be good. He might tithe a bit of his money. Those of you that are Christians know what tithing is. I think he gets £100,000 or something. I don't know whoever wins that. But there you go. So we're going to do a bit of music. Gidney's, we're music missionaries is what we're doing. We're going to tell you a bit about that in a moment. So, and we're going to jazz it about this morning. So I'm going to make some things up as I go along, which is quite normal for me. So, I was looking for some stuff to share about Easter, because we're still in Easter. I like Christmas. I like to stretch Christmas out as long as I possibly can. Easter is even greater, and I like to go the whole season of Eastertide. A lot of us evangelical charismaniacs, we just do Easter like just for a couple of days. But actually, lectionaries and stuff that kind of look at seasons. I think it's a great discipline to make as much of Easter as we possibly can. So if you follow me on Twitter, Missional Monk, I'm still tweeting every day Easter themes, and people keep telling me, Easter's gone. I said, no, Easter is, Jesus is still alive, and it's still very relevant. So it's a brilliant thing to keep talking about. So what I'd like you to do is to come to the next Easter story that we're going to do. And then I've got a little intelligent test for you, because what we're going to do is go into another gospel. So we're looking at John's gospel, chapter 21. Chris will come and tell the story shortly. And what we're going to do is we're going to look at this story, because I was looking for something that the Lord would give me to encourage you. I met with Simon last week, and it was fantastic, really. I was really encouraged. I've only seen Simon play the guitar up at the City Leaders thing, and a couple of Baptist things that I've done of late. And by the way, I'm in process to become a Baptist. I'm already wet, but I'm going to get even wetter. So that's interesting. So we started the process. But it was great to hear the story about the church here, and actually two churches combining. So you'll see that theme. So I think the Lord has given me something for you guys to stay imaginative and creative and innovative, especially in regards when God brings two groups together, and how you can reach together more people with the gospel. So we're going to do that. So if you find John 21, if you've got a thumb, if you're not using a digital Bible, I'll already give you the answer, or I'll give you some clues to where else we're going. We're going to go into, let's get it right, we're going to go into Luke's gospel, so find Luke if you'd like, and chapter 5. Okay, that's your clue. So that's not an Easter story, but they're the flip side of these two stories. It's one coin and two sides. So let's tell you a little bit about us. So my name's Carl Gidney. Next year I shall be 60, so I'm getting a bit old and a bit knackered. But I've been doing this. I became a Christian when I was about 17. I was an art student in Bolton, in Manchester, where my mother still lives. I went to Bible college fairly quickly afterwards, and thought I would be a missionary, maybe to India or Africa. I wasn't. I stayed in this country, and I pastored churches mainly full of white Anglo-Saxon people for about 37 years. So I've been a pastor for a long time. And about six years ago, I thought, I'll be pushing on now. I've been doing this a long time. What do I do for the last 10 years of my kind of active life? So I thought maybe from about 60 to, oh, but maybe about, 55 to 65. I tend to work in 10-year chunks. So Jane and I had a sabbatical. We just built a new church building that cost us a lot of money. And we were thinking, what do we do now for the next 10 years with this building? And I don't know if any of you recognize this stone that's up there. Do you? Do you know it? You should do. It's just a few miles down the road. That's it. It's in Llantwit Major. Okay? If you haven't been there, the stone's got a beautiful place now in the Galilee. I think it's called the Galilee Chapel. It's well worth a visit. You can have a little retreat there. And it's an amazing place. And so Jane and I ended our sabbatical. Did I say retreat? We ended our sabbatical there, which was quite interesting. We knelt and we prayed in that chapel. Said, Lord, what do you want for us the next 10 years? During our sabbatical, we'd been to Hillsongs and all kinds of different kinds of places, looking at churches. Did some theological reflection. Did some kind of seeing what was going on. And we knelt there and asked the Lord, what do you want us to do as we go back? What happened was, the Lord says, actually, you're not really going to go back. You're going to come back here to South Wales. And that was interesting because Jane and I had our very first date in Llantwit Major when we were a lot younger. And we got married here in Cardiff in the city temple, because I was an Elam pastor, you see, so. And Elam Pentecostal. So anyway, so we knew we would be coming back. And the Lord said, you always wanted to be a missionary since you were 18. Now you'll be turning 55, 56, 57. You're going to become a missionary. And I said, fantastic. I'm going to go to India or Africa or Syria, like Jonathan. That was amazing to hear the story, their visit to Jordan. But no, the Lord said, you're going to be a missionary, but in your own country. Well, Wales isn't my country, really. But I've always felt... Well, I've always felt Wales is my home country, and Cardiff is my home city. Excuse my mother, who lives in Bolton, but I've never I left there when I was 16, and I've never been back. So Cardiff has always felt like my home. And he said, you're going to learn to become a missionary in your own culture and in your own context. Now, I wasn't quite sure what the Lord meant by that, but over the next couple of years, when we built a building, we began to experiment. So let's flick through a couple of pictures. So we built this building here that cost us quite a lot of money. We had our own football pitch and some other stuff that we had a school attached to the church. And the church used to meet in the little shed. There's a little shed there, workman shed, by a little tree, if you can see it. And there was about 50 people when we first went. So we were there for about 11 years altogether, a church that we'd known for a long time. So that's Hesketh Bank Christian Centre. And we've been up there a couple of days ago because what we're doing with our choir in the Bay is we're doing Les Mis and some musical theatre stuff, and we're taking them up. So we're beginning our world tour in a little village called Hesketh Bank. That's about 5,000 people. And our friends who live in the Bay around the Millennium Centre, they've all been Googling and going, what on earth is there to do in that place? Because it's hardly anything. And anyway, we built that building, and we thought, well, why are we building a big building in a little village? We lived in the next village, Hesketh Bank, that only has about 1,500 people in the village. And then there's just lots of greenhouses for miles and miles and miles. It's in between Preston and Southport, if you know that area at all. Flat as a pancake. Anyway, so we were kind of panicking. We built this big building. How are we going to fill it? And that's where my missionary experience kind of began to evolve. Let's show you the next picture. So that was it when it was completed. And I've just got there. There's the combined villages, 5,652. Although that's an old figure. And that you've heard of Messy Church, haven't you? I know that there's a messy church here. I've always thought church is always messy. Why do we have to call it messy? But I ended up for the last couple of years with this church, and I had to turn my own mashup church, really. So you know what mashup is, don't you, if you're into music? If you get house music and put it together with reggae music and fuse them, what do you get? Jungle. So, okay, you know, like house music and stuff like that. So if you fuse different kinds of music, you invent something else. So I really like a lot of fusion music, especially if you get world music and Celtic music and prog rock music. That's a very good mashup. It's excellent. It's called a band called Iona, which is a Christian band. Very good. So anyway, we ended up with it. So that says bimodal, that we had to start thinking Sunday congregation, traditional church, how in the West we've always done it for 1800 years. We've done church like this for 1800 years. Yes, we jazz it up, and we sometimes, you know, we can use liturgy, we can use music, we can use drama. The music can be up tempo, but it's still, we've done it exactly the same. It's more or less the same. It hasn't changed. So that was our Sunday congregation. That began to grow. So it went from 50 to 100, 150, 200. But then we also started experimenting being missionaries in our own culture. Missionaries don't wait for people to come to them. What do? They go to Jordan, they go to Syria, they travel. So I had to travel in my own neighborhood where there were no Christians, living on a new estate where people who worked in Manchester and Liverpool, and that we were the only Christians there. And we began to pray. So that's what began to happen. And what we had was a bimodal church, two different ways of working. You've seen hybrid cars that have two different kinds of engines. What's the one engine? It'd be a petrol, traditional one that we know, fossil fuels, that has no future, is about to die. That's what I call Sunday church, okay? It doesn't have much future in our cultural context now. We should do it the best we can, but we have to face the fact that actually it's getting very sluggish, it's outdated, and it's very, very expensive, and it's not very good for the environment, et cetera, et cetera. So what's the other engine? Electric. Now, they're two completely different engineering systems. They don't go together. But in a hybrid car, you can put them together because they've got a common mission. They're propelling a vehicle, a car, forward to a destination. So they can work, even though they're completely different systems, completely different engineering, completely different theory. So we ended up with two different kinds of churches, but going in the same direction. So what the Lord really said to us was, when you've finished experimenting, you'll come back, and that's what you'll do. You'll just do the one single engine. You won't do the fossil fuel church that you've done for 37 years. You'll do the new, really trendy bit. You'll do church in the culture, in the context, without pulling people out. So that's what began to happen. So that's what bimodal thinking is. And I encourage lots of pastors, we have to do that, because the way of being missionaries in our own cities, in our own towns. I started doing this in a village, so I know that it works in rural as well as urban places. Let's go on to the next slide. Then I'm going to get my wife up. So that was our church there, and really God blessed it. We were up there just a couple of days ago, and it's still growing strong. And it is fantastic to meet families that were our neighbours 7 years ago that never went to church. Now they've been on Alpha, and they're at the door shaking hands, and they were doing some Easter stuff and inviting people from the neighbourhood. So it's amazing as we reach out. Let's keep going. This is where we are now. If you follow the arrow, you know where this building is, opposite the BBC, down in the just beyond Mermaid Key. So let's have the next slide. That's Adventurer's Key. And do you know what that statue is there by the Norwegian church? You're all locals. You should know this. Yeah. It's the Terra Nova. Of course, you know the history of the Terra Nova ship leaving in whatever the date was. 19 oh something or other. I can't remember now. Scott of the Antarctic. And that's my wife, Jane, meeting her cousin. We were looking for an apartment and we were praying, Lord, where were we going? We'd just driven down from Lancashire, which took about 7 hours on a Saturday night, had 10 minutes to see an apartment, then drive all the way back to do the Sunday service back in the church. So, we just then, while we were waiting for the estate agent, Jane met her cousin, Helen, that she hasn't seen since she was about 15. Her husband is the artist who's a sculptor. They're both sculptors. And I'd seen this for years and didn't know who made it, that it was somebody in our family, and Jonathan Williams. And we were just captivated by the idea of Terra Nova. You know what Terra Nova means? It means fresh ground, new earth. And we thought, that's what we're called to do. We break fresh ground in how you plant churches and how you do mission in the culture rather than extracting people out. So that's truly pioneering. So we did that. Anyway, let's go on to the next slide. So this is our parish. You're included in there. Some of you, can any of you see your house? Any of you live down there? So it's a pretty big place. We've moved from a village of a few thousand people to this capital city and thinking, oh my goodness, Lord, I have no building now. I haven't got millions of pounds. I don't have a salary. I don't have staff. I don't have PA, even a PA system. I have my guitars and ukuleles and anything else we've got. And we don't have hundreds of Christian friends. We have nothing. We have no building to take. How on earth do we do church in that? Well, we're still trying to work that one out, but there you go. Let's go on to the next picture. Jane, you come and tell us what's happening in this picture, Jane. So this will just tell you a little bit of how the Lord started stuff for us. So come on, let's. Now you're going to have to stand by here. And don't look behind you.
Oh.
Look over there.
Oh, I can look there.
Can you see what the pictures are?
Okay, hi everybody.
This is Jane.
Good to see you. We started, when we came, I've always been involved in music in one genre or another. And I knew when we left Lancashire that the only one thing I knew that God wanted to use me for was still to be involved in choir, because I've always run a choir of some sort. And I really thought, coming back to the land of song, because I'm a Cardiff girl, but of course left when I was 17, 18 when I met Carl. He whisked me off to up north, and I've been there ever since. So I feel quite a northern lass, really, although, you know, I've come home and everything is such a novelty and I love it. The one strong, still sense of calling that I felt when we came back home was to actually explore choir and music. But I thought, coming back to the land of song, no chance, there's too many choirs here. As Carl has already said, when we arrived back in Wales in August, coming up 3 years now, it'll be 3 years in August, we did an awful lot of praying. We knew we were called to be missionaries. We knew we were going to experiment with missional community that some of you, you know, might know bits and pieces about. We knew we were very, very sure of some of what God was calling us to, but we had no idea how it was going to pan out. So we really just started praying. And within our apartment block, which is Carl showed you there on the screen, Adventurer's Key, we felt God placing us there. There was a lot of significance with its name, even, Adventurer's Key, and we were feeling like real adventurers. In fact, this is quite spooky, that our apartment was number 12. And my very last, I was preaching in our church, probably the weekend before we left. And I spoke on, it would be a bit previous to that, because by then we knew where we were going to be living. But I was speaking on Genesis chapter 12, that God, you know, sent Abraham, he didn't know where he was going, blah, blah, blah. So that was Genesis chapter 12, and we happened to be living in number 12, Adventure is Key. So we thought, yeah, this is the place. But anyway, cutting a very, very long story short, we started praying, we started meeting people in our apartment block and a little bit further afield. I've still got a family in Cardiff, and I just said to them, look, we need to start a choir. God's called us to be missionaries, and we knew that this was going to be one of the vehicles, probably one of the main vehicles at the beginning, that we were going to reach people that weren't Christians. So over the course of the next few months, we just began inviting people, although I have missed out a bit. When one of our very first encounters was with a friend that become very dear friends now. They're not believers, but they actually approached me and said it'd be really good if we had a choir in Adventurous Key. And I hadn't mentioned anything, and I tried not to look enthusiastic, you know, and go, oh yeah, that's what I've always wanted to do. We played it quite low key, and they were the first people, and they become our choir administrators. And it grew. We started with about 19 people based around our complex and down the bay and a little bit further afield. We've got quite a few people now from Cardiff North. And that's how we began our first missional community. And we've grown now from, we started with 18, 19, meeting in the Siemens Mission down Cardiff Bay, which is now no more. They've got rid of the Siemens Mission. And we now have a choir. We're coming over 40 now, and people from all around the bay. I don't want to say too much, but we have started meeting over the last couple of years. We've invited a few what we call people of peace, people that God had really already put his hand on and were ready. Spiritual seekers, really, people who were on their own personal journey, and God had already got his hand on their lives. And he started showing us who those people were. We invited them to a few alpha groups and meeting in our home. Hospitality has been a huge key. We've had loads of people in our two-bedroom flat. And gradually, it's a very, very slow process. We're not here telling you, you know, we've got the answers to the world's mission problems. But what God has done, he started with us very gradually, and he has been very faithful. And I think I would say, because, you know, as Carl said, we've been involved in church pastoring and mission, different forms, for many, many years. At least 35 years. And I think for the very first time ever, that what God has called us to now, it feels easy. And there's lots of hard things. I'm not pretending that, you know, we have our challenges, but it feels so right and easy, and it's, you know, God says, you know, my burden is easy, doesn't he, and my burden is light. And it just feels as if what we're doing as missionaries is a very easy fit for us. And it's very challenging, it's very exciting, because almost daily we're having to say, God, you know, what's the next step, what do you want us to do next, and how are we going to develop what you've begun within our small missional community. So yeah, that's just picture of some of our concerts. We meet now regularly. We've gone from the Siemens Mission to a free room in the Millennium Centre. So our rehearsal space is the Millennium Centre. And of course, people just love coming just to rehearsal, because it's, wow, we rehearse in the Millennium Centre. And we sometimes meet in Sunflower and I down in Bute Town quite often. And we have amazing opportunities to sing on the Glanver stage in the Millennium Centre. Our last one was on Good Friday. So we have done a few concerts now on the Glanver stage and other venues. We had a big concert at Christmas in Portland House, and that was full. I suppose the other exciting spin-off, I work in school, in Herbert Thompson School in Ely, and I've got an increasing opportunity there within the school to do music. So I do music across all the age groups. But I run the school choir and the staff choir. And, you know, again, God, step by step, has given us the opportunity to integrate the children from my school and the staff from my staff choir into keynotes. So we've got amazing missional opportunities in that context. So I think we better move on.
Brilliant.
Time's going.
Yeah, thank you.
Great. Thank you. Are there a couple of other slides? I'll just buzz through and then we'll get Chris to come and tell us a story. I can't remember what's up next. Let's have a look. Oh, this just tells you really our theory. What we really decided was to be missionaries, that we had to lower the... You can just click away. Like, we had to lower the bar on what it means to do church and be church, because we had no building, you know, we were lugging no PA, so we had to strip that down. But what we did by lowering the bar to what it means to do church and what church is. So we often, we're in a bar, at one of those places, and we'll say to these non-Christians, this is church, by the way. They say, this is church. Yeah, we're in Wetherspoons, Mount Stewart, you know, we're having breakfast, and we'll say, this is church. There's many people there are not Christians. But what we do is we raise the bar on what it means to be a follower of Jesus, an apprentice, a disciple. So Jane says it's easy. Actually, I found it very difficult. She forces me to go to choir. I don't like singing in choirs. I want to be a solo person, just the spotlight on me. But I'm in the bass section at the back, and I have to sing in Welsh. So it's very, very hard for somebody like me who's severely dyslexic to sing in this language. But anyway, just joking aside, what it means to be a disciple of Jesus is tough. And so we tell them, if you want to follow Jesus, you know, you have to learn to pray, you have to take a sacred meal, you have to change the world and make the world a better place. It's tough following Jesus. So was, I liked Chris's aside, by the way, his other story on Thomas, the police arrived, they were everything. What version has he been reading? But what we do is, normally we encourage people who are spiritual seekers to tell the story as well. But what we do, those of us that know the Bible a little bit more, it's good to memorize. I remember the first time I was introduced to storying, this is what, I had to tell the story of the prodigal son. Well, that's one of the most popular stories of Jesus. I must have preached from it thousands of times over 30-odd years. I had to stand up without any notes and tell the story. Could I remember what the story was? No. I got all the details mixed up. It's very interesting when you have to tell the story just off the top of your head. And that's what we do with non-Christians. And I'm going to show you how this is in a story here. So two things struck me. One was about fresh fish that he said. Jesus is very, very creative. He's very jazzy, is Jesus. He's always innovating. He's always reimagining. And I like that idea. I'd never thought of that. Fresh fish. They said same old, same old. In church sometimes, in Christianity, you're same old, same old. Bill Nair done that, got the T-shirt. And then, you know, there's a lot of people walk away from Christianity in church because, you know, they get bored. But actually, if you're following Jesus, he's always got something fresh and new. New doesn't mean it's novel. It's something. It could be something old that has become newer or newish that Jesus just refreshed. So it was that. But then the other thing was he mentioned very clearly what kind of fire this was in this story. So if you look at the text, you can look at the text now if you like, and we're going to, so get your Bible out. What did he say? That's interesting. You know what a charcoal is, use it in the summer. By the way, did you see summer? It was yesterday. That was it. did you get your barbecue out? No, too late. But barbecue, charcoal, it's only mentioned twice in the whole of the New Testament, charcoal. This is once, and here's a trick, another trick question. Where's it mentioned the other time? Very specific smell, specific kind of fire, charcoal. Where is it? Yeah, close, keep going, yeah. It's just a few chapters back. It was just last week, the story. No. Close. Getting warm. Correct. You can check it. That's the only other time in the Bible. Charcoal. So as soon as Peter reaches that fire, what's going on? Oh my goodness. Yeah, that's a familiar smell. So Jesus is a genius, isn't he? He's rewinding the same story of his denial. And you can see it in the three times, can't you? So here's another trick question. This is where I've already helped you. Where else in the story that Chris told you do you see an echo? So that's an echo. Charcoal fire. Only one other instance, charcoal fire. And Peter was at both of them. What else in this story, it's the beginning of the story that Chris told, to do with... Exactly. So go to the other text then. Let's do the flip side. And this is just what I want to leave with you as a church. So this is in Luke 5. This was where Jesus calls the first disciples. And that was the parting shot of Jesus in this story that Chris told. What was the parting shot to Peter? Follow me. Could we just put up the last two slides and you'll just see. So just abbreviate what we're going to do. Then we're going to have a bit of jazz music. That's a bit of missional theory, so forget about that. We're not in Bible college now. So keep going. So while we're getting there, it should say something. There we go. Fish. Okay. Fish follow, and then we're going to do a bit of jazz. All right, so that's all we're going to do. So there you go. You've got the two texts there. So have a look at it, 1 to 11. Same echo. Follow me. When was the first time Peter heard that in this story? So just have a look at it now, because we haven't got time to story this and we haven't got time to preach it verse from verse. But I just want to share a couple of things with you as a church. So it's the same thing. So what's the similarity here in the two stories? Come on, help me. So there's fish involved. How many fish? Just a few. Multitudes in this story. Multitudes. Chris, you missed one small detail out in the story. How many fish was there in the Easter story? 153. Must have counted them out. Because fish, that was their livelihood. They'd run away, and so they knew how much one each was going to cost, and now they're going to take it down to the mark and get some money. Because they've given up being disciples and missionaries. They've gone back to the old job. But here it's multitudes. And because there were so many fish, what did they have to find? Could they handle it on their own? No. They found a partnership. And that's what I liked about you guys when Simon just last week was telling me. You brought two ships together. There's a Baptist ship sailing along on a lot of water. And what was the other one? A brethren church or something like that. Okay, whatever it was, it doesn't matter. But it was you've combined two things together. And so when I was looking at this just a couple of days ago, by the way, I haven't preached a sermon for 2.5 years, so just to let you know. People said I'd never be a missionary and live in the Bay without a church because I love preaching. I've preached one sermon in the last 2.5 years. So you're the only second church that's invited me back because they didn't want... Missionary's a very lonely job. I was thinking, where's all the churches that want me to go around preaching? But they don't. Anyway, there you go. And it's because I do it like this, you see. It's a bit of a mashup. It's a bit messy. But actually, joking aside, I preach every day of my life. And I'm so, Jane said, it's so easy, it's so exciting. We have so many non-Christian friends now that live here in Cardiff, and most of them are spiritual seekers, never been to church. They're about five cultural distances away from Christianity and church. So they never, we'd never bring them here because they'd just be like fish out of water, basically. what is so easy is to tell stories and to share, they're eager. In fact, we did the last Alpha course that we did, which was in the Millennium Center in Bar One, the coffee that's over the top. And 14 of our friends from choir came. And we just went around the room. Why are you here about the Alpha course? And three of them all said the same thing. And they didn't compare notes. They said, we come here because we like listening to good stories. That was it. That's what they said. And we thought, good stories? Well, these are sophisticated Westerners. What do they want to know stories about Jesus? Because we just tell them stories from John's Gospel, basically. And they said, well, we like hearing your story and how Jesus is real to you. I said, really? Yeah, they do. So they love stories. I think when God brings two ships together, it's because there's a multitude of people waiting to become followers of Jesus. And I've just got really, just go over to the next slide, please, and that'll just tell you, abbreviated, what I just want to share with you. By following Jesus' word and missional command, we become fishers of multitudes of people who are the furthest cultural distance from the gospel and the church. Let's just stop there for a second and just refer to some of these. So have a look at this text, okay? What do you think I'm referring to? People who are spiritual seekers, bringing them to faith, that the furthest away from what we traditionally know as church or any, even an echo of Christianity or the gospel. I am shocked by how many people who live in a so-called, and it isn't a Christian country anymore. Wales is even less a Christian country than England is, actually. You've got less church attenders. You've got more Christians praying for revival. But besides that, there isn't. But within our context, people are a long way from church or the gospel. In this story here, can you see that when Jesus gets in a boat? Let's think of this boat, because Jesus is now telling stories. He's preaching and teaching. Can you see that in the text? Jesus stands up and teaches and asks Simon, this fisherman, I need your boat to use it as a pulpit. So the pulpit, the church, if we think of that as a vessel, like an instrument of church, think of the boat like a Terra Nova. That's actually church, okay? Like your building and what we do in church. So Jesus is telling stories. And that's what we do in church, basically. You can call it preaching, teaching, discipling, whatever you like, message church. But we have to tell the stories of Jesus. And that's the important thing. When Jesus does that, then at the end, Jesus says, what does he say to Peter with his boat after he's finished his story? He says, I don't know how it says it in your translation, just have a look. Does it say, launch out into the deep? Go where it's deep. And of course, when they get there, they go, well, we've been fishing here before and nothing happened. Nevertheless, at your word, Jesus. This is just the point that I'm making, is that we have to take church and we have to get it outside of its four walls. Church is not to do with what you do on a Sunday morning. It's not to do with a building or a form. The function of church is to tell stories about Jesus to people who are the furthest away from the church and the gospel. It's called mission. That's our function. Our function is to do with the gospel. We have to get our missiology first. That's on the front burner. If we do mission, as we said, if we do make disciples out of spiritual seekers, that's church. Out of that, we will have church. But what we do, what we've done for 1,800 years in the West, we have always put our ecclesiology, how we do church, what church is, what happens in church, what it looks like, we always put that first. And then we say to non-Christian spiritual seekers, what boat do we want you to come to? We want you to come to an event that we're doing. It doesn't work in our culture anymore. It hasn't really worked very well since the 1960s. But only the last couple of years we've realized there's more and more people, whatever church, even really as a pastor, really for years I struggled, thought, well, actually, people are not coming to church. It's not very effective in our culture because it's boring. We do too much liturgy. It's very boring. People don't know. So let's really make it a bit more sexy. Let's have some good Hillsong's music. Let's, instead of an organ and a piano, let's have a guitar and a drums and stuff like that. And let's make it interactive. Let's put videos and let's do that. And let's make it much more interactive. And let's, instead of wearing suits, let's come just dressed as you are. And let's have coffee and let's have tea. I'm not against those things. We should be doing those things. But we're crazy if we think that the people are the furthest away from the gospel and our culture is on a cataclysmic journey. It's rocketing that direction. It's not rocketing back to the church. It's propelling even further and further away from its Christian moorings. And that's what I call the going of come. We said to people, come. No, the going, that's gone. It's gone and it's going to increase. The velocity of it is picking up speed, especially in urban areas. Urban, Western, modern context. People shop on a Sunday. They don't, and they know nothing about the Christian gospel. So that can be quite shocking, but we then have to think like Jesus. Jesus is commanding us, launch out not into those that are culturally close to church, but the deepest water, the furthest water. Why? What was in the deepest water in this story? How many fish? Loads of them. If you just go, and our main strategy is only go for people that are either de-church, and shall I tell you what happens with Alpha? We know the stats. I won't put them up for you here. But we know the stats. 76% of new converts on Alpha courses in the UK, they come from a category that we know the stats. They come from 20%, which is a 40% slice of the pie in the UK of what we call de-churched. People who used to go to church who don't. 20% of them are open de-church, 20% of them are closed. In other words, been there, done that, don't ever talk to me about Jesus or the church or spirituality ever again. But the 20% that don't go to church anymore, but have some church in their background and are open to Jesus or spirituality, 76% of new converts in Alpha come from that one category alone. That's not deep waters. That's shallow waters that is culturally the closest to us. They look like Christians. They dress like Christians. They have the moral values of Christians. They have the lifestyle standards. They look like Christians. But Jesus is saying here, send into the deepest place. You just gave me the answer. Why? Because there's a lot more fish. And let me tell you, I've known for the last 7 years since I've been doing this and since I've come to Cardiff, I know Jesus was telling the truth. The fields are white unto harvest. No problem with the mission field. No problem in Wales with people wanting to follow Jesus. It's just they don't know who Jesus is. Jesus is already operating in their life. The problem is, what did Jesus say? Exactly. I tell every pastor I can, give me your best people. I'm now a little bit clapped out, a bit like Peter. Do you hear what Chris said in that story? Peter, when you were young, you what? Dressed yourself. I can hardly dress myself now. By the way, I've got a frozen shoulder and I'm just recovering from labyrinthitis, so my wife had to dress me this morning. But I said, where are all the young, fiery Christians? The best that we've got. Why do you have to have clapped out people like me as missionaries out into the fields are white unto harvest, but the problem is the laborers are few. What was Jesus' solution? Pray to the Lord of the harvest. So I'm praying everywhere I go. Where are the people who want to be missionaries in their own university, in their own workplace, and do church there and grow church from spiritual seekers? Because there's loads of them. And I can tell you, we have so many non-Christian friends now. It is just astounding. So when you bring two churches together, that's because there's a multitude. And I was tremendously excited when Simon was sharing me about your innovation and your creativity. And that's the last thing I just want to share with you now. So let's just finish this sentence. To do this, we team up, that's for you guys, to teach the sacred stories of God. Jesus was teaching in the boat. That's what we need to do. We've got to tell the stories of Jesus wherever we are. We listen to the voice of Jesus. Lord, we've been there. There's no fish. Nevertheless, so we have to pray and we have to listen. And we go, Lord, where are the spiritually receptive people where I live? And there's loads of them. They start jumping out like salmon fish at you. We have so many people that just in our choir, which is a very small little pool, we can't cope with them. There's not enough Christians to lead them to the Lord and to disciple them and to relate to them. That's the hard thing, is relating, spending lots of time and discipling them through friendship. So we listen to the voice of God, and out of love for Christ, Peter, do you love me? We reimagine and we improvise church and our life's mission to the missionary beat of the rhythms of the kingdom. So that's the last thing I just want to encourage you on your innovation. I'm going to get Alex to come and just sing. Because that's the following and that's the fishing, but there's also the jazzing with Jesus. And what we have to really learn in our culture now is to really listen to Jesus and be very, very flexible. Because the thing with Jesus is he's always serendipitous. You know what serendipity means? It means one surprise after another surprise after another surprise. Following Jesus should always be fresh fish every day. It shouldn't be same old, say, oh, I don't know, dead my daily devotions again. You just read. Jesus is always surprising us. And what is surprising us now is he's answering the prayer for revival. But it's completely paradoxical and counterintuitive that most of the church don't get it, especially us vicars. We don't get it. Because Jesus is answering the church by less and less people coming to Sunday church. And we go, oh, we've got to pray so more people will come and flock. No. Jesus said that boat belongs out in the deep water. And that's why I think Jesus is not going to answer our prayers and bring revival by packing our Sunday churches. You can have a mega church, remember. We're just three people. So we don't have to sweat hard at that one. That's Jesus' definition of church. But really what is happening is there is lots of spiritual people around. There are loads of them. So you bump into them. You fall over them once you start praying, listening to Jesus. And he sends us. So we have to learn to be imaginative, be creative. And that's where the jazz comes in. Because Jane is a classical musician. I'm like a folky Bob Dylan-y sort of person. Oh, George Formby with me ukulele. And Alex is jazz. And our youngest son, who's in university here doing film and media, I was just watching his little documentary he's done of Alex. And Alex, will you just come here just quickly? Because I want to just ask you a question, then you're going to sing. And then we'll hand back to these guys. And the question I've got for you is, the little bit that I listened to this morning, which microphone are you using? Okay. Was, I saw a little clip on the interview that he was doing about, you've really found your home since you've been on this jazz journey. You were a musician in church for a lot of years. But you mentioned I didn't get it exactly, that's why I'm asking you, about learning, playing a song through twice. And then about who does the instrumentation and the kind of improvisation. So tell me a little bit about that, because I don't know about that jazz theory. Do you recall that bit in the...
No. what I was going to say anyway before I sing this song. In the convention in jazz is quite often that you will go through the tune twice.
Right, that's it.
And then you will... go through using the same chord structure, so the same structure of the song, you'll kind of invent things. Now, I'm a melody person, so I invent things around the melody. The more way out jazz that lots of people, some people hate it, some people love it, people will invent things around the harmony. Yeah. And that can be a little bit more difficult to understand, yeah. I think.
Okay.
But that's the general idea.
That was the answer. Really struck me about the doing twice, which I didn't know, and you've just confirmed. So what we normally do is, that's what we do when we do discipleship. We tell the story, they tell it again, then we improvise around it. We ask them questions, just like you do, and then we say, well, what's Jesus asking you? If this story is true, we always say if, usually, because they say, well, I don't believe in Jesus. We don't care if they say that. We know that Jesus is working in their lives, or they wouldn't be sat there having a coffee with us. And then we say, what does Jesus want you to change in your life? And that, because Jesus is very creative in telling people exactly what they need to do, you know. And so the idea of improvisation just following Jesus is a very creative process. And the more creative we are in our discipleship and how we do church and how we do mission and how we do faith, I think is really dancing along to those kind of rhythms that Jesus is doing in our culture. So will you introduce your song, and then thanks ever so much for helping me today. Cheers.
Thanks, Carl, and thank you all for your very warm welcome. We've really enjoyed being here this morning. It's been a fantastic time for us, I'm sure for you every week. Okay, so the song I'm going to sing is called You'd Be So Nice to Come Home To. It's a Cole Porter number. Some of you may know it. You can find it on YouTube or all sorts of places, performed in all sorts of different ways. I'm going to sing it with a sort of Latin feel today, so hopefully you'll enjoy what you hear and just relax and listen to the song, listen to the improvising, and then we'll get back to the tune again if it sounds a bit worrying in the middle. Okay, thank you very much. Much. Over to Simon, I think, or Carl, or anybody.